Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here we are. I'll start with a question that I hadn't asked you because I wrote it down and forgot. So you and I have been fortunate enough lately to have been invited to fund early stage psychedelic startups.
Yeah.
And we were going through this, like, we're going to send them it's like a low five-figure amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the minimum amount that they will ever accept.
Yep. Yep.
But in the sheet, it's got all these questions about, do you have this much in the bank? Do you have this? And they're essentially trying to find out if you or a conglomerate of people qualify as an accredited investor.
Mm-hmm.
And the only, and so my question to you is this accredited investor status total BS in the sense that the government lets me gamble in Las Vegas mm-hmm. and make all sorts of deleterious, harmful decisions to my health, but they won't let me access the most explosive, like, tech stocks ever? Like, somebody invited me to do this with SpaceX, and I was like, oh my God, yes. And I put in the same small five-figure amount that was basically done to me because they're a friend, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to throw you into this fund that you couldn't possibly get into. So mm-hmm. you're in the finance world. Am I missing something? Are they actually looking out for the little guy?
It's both, I think, is the thing. So yes, this is looking out for the little guy in the sense that SpaceX, a psychedelic startup, all this money, the way VC firms work in general, expect a lot of it to go to zero. And so when you are an accredited investor, you are making these investments periodically over time. And when some of them blow up, you're compensated by some of them doubling or tripling.
So or 10xing or 100xing.
Or 50xing. So if you only have 10 grand in the bank, mm-hmm. then letting you invest in this is probably not a good idea because you're likely to lose it all. So it is to protect you. What's weird is that they don't protect you in the other areas. Yeah. So this isn't actually, in my opinion, gatekeeping to try to help the rich get richer. But what's strange is that the government doesn't say, listen, you're absolutely wasted drunk in Las Vegas right mm-hmm. now. You just took out 10 grand. That's above our, that's our warning thing for like, hey-o,
yeah.
you need to show us that you have at least 50 yeah, yeah. grand in the bank before you are drunkenly gambling 10 grand on roulette. That's how you would like to see it. If the policy is that the government's going to protect you from making bad financial decisions, it should extend to more than just startups.
Got it.
Basically. But at the same time, it would not be great if someone who only had 10 grand in the bank put 10 grand into a psychedelic startup because you're mm-hmm. likely to never see that again.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my take.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. It's the reverse of what I, it's not, yeah, it's not that, oh, we got to keep all these people with less money out because they're going to crowd out the rich people's money. It's
no.
like, oh, if we're going to protect them here, we should probably protect them over here as
I mean,
well.
Especially because the truth is even for us, we're barely making a dent. Mm-hmm. SpaceX is raising, you know, tens of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wouldn't crowd out, even if you let a bunch of little guys invest. Oh, okay. Instead of investing $6 million, I get to invest $5.8 million. Like, it doesn't matter to me yeah. as a high-level VC firm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, most likely people would just be losing their shirts and their life savings. It's
Got
just
it.
Strange that we don't protect them from doing that.
That it should be the same. Whatever it is, it should
Las
be.
Las Vegas is a very yeah. odd setup. Not saying it has to change. It's just a strange place that you can go to. They will pump you full of alcohol. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows they are trying to get you drunk so you make bad decisions. And then you do make bad decisions
yeah.
and you lose all your money to them and it's totally fine. If I described it to you, but instead of calling it Las Vegas, I called it a business I was running, mm-hmm. you would tell me it was ethically wrong and maybe illegal. Now that said, I love going to casinos. Yeah, I yeah. lose money every time I go, but never more than I can afford. And so it's fine. That's just the tax of having fun in Vegas.
You're not losing money. They're just very expensive drinks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's an hour of entertainment, but I'm playing with nothing. I'm playing with, you know,
yeah. Couple hundred bucks.
And if I win, by the way, it's the same. I've won nothing. You know, mm-hmm. that's the difference is if you go and bet your life savings, you can win a material amount. I never lose or win anything noticeable. I'm looking for the lowest minimums every yep. time. And I like Vegas. So this isn't to demonize Vegas, but it's just strange that if I told you I was having people come to my house, tricking them into drinking more than they should because I was having basically naked women solicit them to drink more for free, yeah. and then having them gamble money that's rigged so that the odds are always in my favor, you would question if I should be doing that or not. And even if it was legal.
Yeah. Vegas is interesting because we live there and you see behind the curtain when you live there. And it is not a city. It's a strip wide and then there's the downtown area. It's a strip wide grift. Like the entire thing is designed to separate you from your money. And one of the biggest lubricants is alcohol and drugs.
And the second biggest is beautiful women.
Yes.
You go to all the clubs and there you think that the beautiful women are there for you because, oh, how great is it to have a server that's so shockingly beautiful, but she's absolutely there to separate you from your money and get you to buy as many bottles of the most expensive variety of champagne
that
she can.
Just so you know, if you're ever in Vegas and you think you lucked out, like you're on the strip and some guy comes up to you and he invites you out to a club that night, you're like, oh my God, thank God we found the guy who's going to get us in for free. Like, you've never lucked out in Vegas, ever.
Except that one time you put it on green on the roulette wheel.
Yeah, one of the biggest tricks in Vegas is that you think that you got lucky.
Yep.
And really what you did is you're just in the first play of the con. So if you're ever on the strip and there's the guys handing out these cards, like, hey, but you guys look like really cool. You should come to the club tonight. What you got to realize is there's one of those every 200 feet on the strip. You're going to bump into one of them. They invite you to come to these clubs. What they don't tell you is that if you come after like 10 p.m., which of course you will, you have to either wait in line and then pay. Their job is basically just to get you in line to general admission to these clubs. Mm-hmm. And that same game is played constantly in Vegas. Oh, it's a discount on this. It's like, no, you're getting ripped off at every stage. So you just have to go in, and this is how you have fun, or at least I think you have fun in Vegas. You set aside an amount of money that is a burn pile.
Yeah.
And you're like, this doesn't exist. This can be spent on, you know, what, a food, drink, or gambling, and I don't expect to have any monetary return on that. And then you're okay.
Yeah, and if you come out with anything left in the burn pile, you've won.
I'll tell you one way that we did actually do well in Vegas, the buffets. We made them pay. We would like just wait in the buffets, $28, and just be there for 2.5 hours, eat 10,000 calories.
Once a day.
And
be like,
and then occasionally they'd let us take food out. We'd be like, sorry, can we have this on our plate? Can we just get a plastic bin? Because we live there. That's the other thing. They really hook you up if you're a local. I have a bunch of stuff that is just random.
Keep ripping, dude.
So you saw this. I was on the roof the other day, and this is just for people because I've said this now a handful of times. I got a text from my alma mater, American University.
Ah, yes.
Saying, hey, because of the pandemic, we have students that are hard hit and they can't afford food. Would you consider, you know, just $25 helps them get a couple meals?
And to be clear, they can't afford food. So that's a big problem that the AU students have.
Yes. And I was like, wait a second. Like, I already gave you guys $120,000. Like, what did you do with that? Mm-hmm. One. And then I knew it. I Googled it. It was like American University Endowment. And theirs is small relative to other colleges. Mm-hmm. They have $720 million worth of endowment.
They can't use that to feed starving students.
And students that can't eat. And so they go, like, it's just the most, I've never had a product that disappointed me as much as my college education.
Can you imagine if a business did the same thing? If a business is like, I have $720 million in the bank, but I'm going to have to cut your minimum wage to the point where you can't afford food. I'm sorry.
I mean, to be fair, that's like Amazon. You know what I mean? But then it would be like Amazon asked their customers for donations.
This is my point. They get tons of flack for that. Amazon gets shit on for that all the time.
Yes, but what they don't do is ask their customers for donations. They don't text you and be like, hey, we have employees that cannot afford to live. Yeah. Like, would you consider giving just a bit more? College to me, and again, if you had a different college experience, I've never been more disappointed in a purchase and then hit up after that disappointing experience more times for free money. Yeah. It is wild that industry is so entitled.
So honestly,
that they have the gall to text me is berserk.
As I think about it though, that would be an interesting business practice generally. If every time you bought something, they hit you up and they're like, hey, listen, we charged you what we thought was a fair amount.
Yeah.
But did you think it was more valuable? Like, hey, you paid $20,000 for this car, but are you loving it? Maybe give us another $1,000 because like we could use it.
Tesla just contacted you and was like, your Tesla.
If Mazda hit me up, it's like, hey, how's you surfing a lot
and
more
what
with
they
the
say
car,
is like,
right?
We noticed that you donated last year and you'd like to continue. We noticed you posting a lot about your Tesla on social media. So, I mean, we've had longer conversations at college that we don't need to go into and the value or lack thereof. But I was just like, oh my goodness, these guys still have my number. They're still contacting me. By the way, you know what they did? they deleted my college email account like 6 years ago. You know what I mean? You know, they can't even hold the server space for me. But they've kept my phone records just in case they need to contact me for money. So I got a totally random week. Trump's interview on Facebook was taken down. Yep. One of the Trumps interviewed him.
I didn't even know this happened.
So he was interviewed by someone else. He doesn't have like channels to distribute himself. Someone else interviewed him. They took it down. Andrew Schultz had on Alex Jones on his channel. He was taken down.
Really?
Yes. I don't know the exact reason. On YouTube.
Alex Jones was taken down on YouTube from Andrew Schultz's YouTube channel? That's crazy.
Okay, so we're at, I would say there was phase one, of which I would say Alex Jones was like the beginning of testing. Can we just deplatform people? And the answer is, of course we can.
Well, he was the first uniform one that I heard of.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're like, oh, I lost my Twitter account. Mm-hmm. You know, even Brett Weinstein at one point. It's like, I lost access to my Twitter account. But Alex Jones was the first time they went, on the same day, we're going to remove him from the podcast app, the YouTube app, the Twitter app. It was like a mafia hit to his electronic platform.
And if it went in stages, it was like, look, this post is too dangerous. You know, that was stage one. Like, you can't have it, this post. And then it was like, okay, you remove from this platform. You're removed from all of these platforms. Yeah. And now what it is, and I didn't get a chance to watch it because it was removed and I couldn't, you know, easily find it. I don't believe that Trump was calling for insurrection or doing anything that would be defined as reasonably dangerous within this interview, that it presented a clear and present danger such that it needed to be taken down.
Well, we'll never know. It's 1984, dude.
I don't think that's the argument that they would even bother making. He now is a person who is so dangerous that he can be taken down on other people's platforms. And I think this is the whatever wave, third, fourth, fifth wave of...
Well, not just to be clear, not on other people's platforms. That's the danger. On other people's channels.
On other people's channels.
Within their platform.
Yes, that's...
Because the other problem is that you cannot create alternative platforms.
Yes, if you make a Parler, Amazon Web Services...
Literally, because I was like, okay, the App Store took Parler down. Yeah. That's fair. It's their store. But Amazon Web Services taking down the web service to their website.
It's their server.
I know. You know? So that's the point, is it's not that he was taken off of, he can't go on anyone's channel within their platform, which they do own.
Yes.
And this is the whole, are they a platform or are they a publisher debate.
So to me, it's just so, at this point, it is so obvious that they are publishers and, or at least act in that capacity often enough that they should be regulated as a publisher. And I believe that they should maintain the right to remove people, all of those sorts of things. But the thing, it, you know, people aren't consistent, but it seems that we have colluding monopoly-like behavior, or at least it appears like collusion if it's not outright behaving as collusion.
How wild is it that you can just make a president disappear?
Yeah.
Like, you heard from this guy every day. He was on every news channel, and he's gone.
Yeah, and it only, I mean, it was...
The one thing I heard from him, someone like printed off letterhead for him and then scanned it into a tweet.
Really?
Yeah, it was for his thing where he said, don't forget about me, I'm the reason you have the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
It was just stupid. It was a stupid message. He said this wouldn't have been here for 5 years without me. It's like, well, that's not true.
A little bit.
I imagine it would have roughly been the exact same time frame. But yeah, no, the only way he got that message out was he
like, you know, Donald Trump was there weekend one, like deconstructing the genome of
maybe the COVID it was strain. When he, you know what? It was probably when he got COVID and kicked it so fast. He had the super gene.
He had the super gene.
And then that's how they got the vaccine. They used his DNA.
Could be.
I got it, dude. That's why he's saying, don't forget to thank me.
Yeah. Well, in any event, what I was like, oh man, this is yet another wave of boiling the frog, deal with it. You're going to get comfortable with this level of
control. People love it. People are, well, half the
some people love it, but it's just, it's, wow. Like I can't say certain things. I can't say them on this platform. Mm-hmm. Other people can't have me saying it on the platform. Like
it has just been accepted that freedom of speech does not extend to online platforms.
But, and what's interesting is that it is no longer just in the domain of ideas. Like, this idea is dangerous. And we can debate, is it dangerous to say that COVID is called by 5G or should you have the right to say that? It's no, this person is associated with dangerous ideas. So if they say things that make other people like them or make them seem credible, even if in the context of this hour they're not saying anything outrightly dangerous, that is too dangerous to have them be a credible, heard
person. Just to be clear, nobody, including us, cares about this enough to do anything about it.
No.
Like,
no,
there's no action plan to stop this. This bulldozer will just keep going.
Yes. No, that's 100% right. And I'm one of the things, it was funny because I saw a post that was the backlash or whatever. There's this idea that there's, I'm waiting to see it, and I don't. I think that...
Well, Parler, frankly, was the attempt. Parler might have made Ripple if it had been allowed to exist.
So in terms of, I want to get too deep into like psychographics of where this belief stems from, but it seems unless there is a real tangible world event, which could be something like widespread rioting, wars in the, you know, take for instance, in the case of climate change, if like Miami went underwater, a lot of people's minds would change about climate change in overnight. So short of something real world affecting a significant portion of Americans all at once, I don't think that
it's part of learning from other cultures. You know, China's learning how to be number one from us, and we're going to give that to them. And we're learning how to be a authoritarian dictatorship that limits information.
Well, to be fair, and I know you're joking, but it's like the difference is, and it's important that I believe that these companies have the right to say, I don't like the color of your tie. Goodbye. You know, like that. I think the freedom of association.
Not if they're platforms.
Yeah. They should be regulated.
Publishers have that, right?
And they should be regulated as publishers or forced to behave as platforms.
But platforms don't have it. Like, I think that phone providers are platforms.
Correct.
A phone can't. Well, flash forward 2 years and let's see if this is still true. But today, a phone company can't listen into your phone call, dislike the content of your phone call,
anything,
and hang up the call.
The FBI might tap your phone and come get you, but the phone company is not going to disconnect your service.
Well, and AT&T might be doing this in 2023. So this podcast is still up in the future, and I got it wrong.
Aged like milk.
My bad.
Another semi...
Can you imagine? We're just midway through a call, and AT&T doesn't like it. They just disconnect us.
Yeah, which is what happens with, you know, live streams and all these other things. Another thing that I just saw, which was Jocko Willink was on Jordan Peterson's podcast.
That is two very intense individuals right there.
There was a very interesting moment where, and I was like, this is the question that I've wanted to ask Jocko since I read his book. And Jordan says, basically, what do you think of the Iraq war? You know, it seems to me that there was this horrible attack in New York, and it wasn't, in a classic Petersonian phrasing, it wasn't obvious to me why we were in Iraq afterwards. And Jocko takes, I don't know, 5-ish, 10-ish minutes to preface the question with how it's important. And leaders often have strategic ideas in mind that you don't see and kind of wraps it up. And Jordan comes back and I was like, thank God. He says, what do you think about Iraq if you were in a leadership position? And he does finally come around at the end of his answer to saying, I was in the torture chambers of Saddam Hussein and I saw these hooks. And I thought, I'm not mad that we're taking this guy out. And while I understand that perspective, I guess this is the difference between him and me. He was on the ground, and I can look at, you know, cold, hard numbers on Wikipedia. It does seem like Jocko is someone who might be a senator one day, that's poor decision-making. Like, if someone has a torture chamber, then we should start it. War.
you're saying because it's not that it was a bad thing to lose Saddam Hussein as the leader of Iraq, but because it came at the cost of American lives, Iraqi civilian lives, $2 trillion. Like, not that if you could, with no one knowing, snap your fingers and have Saddam replaced with a nice president, that you wouldn't do that.
Sure.
But you're saying just because he has hooks in his interrogation room doesn't necessarily mean it's worth killing 100,000 civilians, a bunch of U.S. soldiers, spending $2 trillion.
He. I was waiting for him to sort of articulate his principle, and this is as close as he came in the answer, was I was not upset that we took this guy out, which is like, man, if we invaded every person with a torture chamber with the same reckless abandon that we did in Iraq,
weren't we
to take bad guys
electrocuting
out.
People at one point?
No, we were waterboarding.
No, wasn't there
waterboarding?
Waterboarding is legal.
Yeah.
Weren't Abu Ghraib, we illegally electrocuting people at some point?
It's wild. It's, and I think he would, I don't know. This is the thing. He didn't, it seemed a difficult question for him to answer. And I would
Google that on your phone real quick. I'm just curious.
I'd be super curious to hear it because Jordan kind of got semi-pointed twice and then let off. But it seems this is the question I've heard him talk about and sort of about leadership within the context. But he's never really gone into like, we shouldn't have been there, which is what seems the obvious answer. Like, what? Why were we there? You know, there's a lot of other places that have bad leaders that are unkind to their civilian population. At the time in 2003, it seems that Iraq wasn't even at the very tippy top of the list. didn't have weapons of mass destruction, didn't have all of these other things. We shouldn't have been there. And I'm surprised, but interested in why he doesn't say that. And I'm interested because he's got a very different perspective than me, you know, and was on the ground. But I was unpersuaded just by what I heard him say. Yeah. And I wonder, and this is something that we've talked about in the past that I've wrestled with, is like, if you're a leader, is it better to be in the high tower looking at surveying the world in the battlefield, disconnected, making cold, rational, objective decisions? Or is it better to be the guy that's like in the blood and the muck and sees the hooks and knows viscerally firsthand? I don't know. Yeah. But it does seem that that's a danger.
Well, there's a lot of,
too close to it.
I imagine there's a lot of countries with hooks.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So you made the point that America has places that are not that are not completely far from that. Yes, there's no hooks, but it's like we find ways to torture you that are within the rules or
black sites. Well, I'm saying even if you're just like, yeah, our public policy is if you have a torture chamber, we invade you and we kill 100,000 of your civilians and we let our own people die and we spend $2 trillion. I don't even think Iraq would be the number one place you'd pick.
That's definite. I don't know definitely because I'm not a, it seems safe to
that
say.
It seems unlikely it's the number one
that it's, yes.
place for torture.
Yes.
I would bet the world. If you gave me Iraq or the world, I would bet the world in 2003.
Yes.
Pretty comfortably. I bet the world.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would, it's like going back and buying Bitcoin. That seems like a really safe bet.
Yeah. So even if that is your policy, is torture's bad, the US doesn't torture, that was propaganda. We waterboard, it's different. Mm-hmm. Hooks are evil, and you invade hooks. I still don't think this thought process would get us into Iraq first.
Yeah.
It might be on the list of places we invaded. Yeah. But
he did have an interesting point, and he thinks of it, again, he thinks of it from a soldier's, his perspective, which is mm-hmm. someone who was going over there. And what I thought was an interesting point is, if somebody gives you a ridiculous objective, like you're going to go storm that hill that is heavily fortified, and he takes everything back to tacticals, because I think mm-hmm. that's his world.
Yeah.
They're going to invade this. There's a hill. They're heavily fortified. They got more men, more machine guns, whatever. And they say, you got to go do this. And you think it's a horrible idea. If you don't do it, you abdicate any control over that situation to someone else who might just do it worse. Mm-hmm. So what he says is, I prefer to be the guy that says, oh, I don't like this, but I'll do it so that I can have some control over a very terrible situation.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying he should have dishonorably discharged himself. That's totally different. Saying that if you were trying to stop torture, you wouldn't invade Iraq in 2003 is a completely different sentence than saying the soldiers sent there by the U.S. Yes. should have abdicated their duty and fled. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying I don't think that I have to think it was a good idea by the president and the senators who voted for it to still think that the soldiers performed their duty or whatever. Like, I have no opinion
on
that.
It could be the right thing to do. Go, look, this is going to be war. It's going to be brutal. And if I go, I can try to make it a little less brutal or, you know, not pull the trigger on that one person who might be a civilian.
Just to be clear, I know so little about being on the ground in Iraq that I have no judgment at all towards the people mm-hmm. who did it and if they did it well or poorly, because I have no information besides probably misinformation. Mm-hmm. My critique is on the decision made by the politicians mm-hmm. to go there based on faulty logic. So this isn't to say Jocko did anything bad when he was there. He might have. I don't know anything about it. But this is just saying, the crap we were fed by Bush to get us there and justify it is not true. And saying that it's because they have torture chambers is also not true, because I think other places have torture chambers.
I found it interesting that he struggled, or not even struggled, doesn't think that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just, I was like, damn.
Well, I have another thing about the Army, actually, that I was going to talk about, which kind of talks about this, which is just around like the indoctrinating, I guess,
see the
PC
most recent
version
commercial? You weren't here last night with me and Henry.
This is what I wanted to bring up. Henry told me about it.
Oh, my God.
Do you want to talk about the commercial?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, so there, I was just talking to your brother about this Army commercial, and it's a commercial that makes war look like a video game and asks you what character you want.
It's a hero shooter is what it is.
Yeah. It's Call of Duty. It's Halo.
It's Apex Legends. There's these different types of guys where it's Outriders, and it's, do you want to be the provider? That's the cook, you know, like the front man. It's like, choose your type of character.
Yeah, it makes it like a video game. And then I was looking at I just went down a rabbit hole of other Army commercials, and they almost all shot like video games or movie trailers with the voice and the music and the helicopters looking really cool and everyone's pretty attractive in the military. Yeah. And I don't know why, but the parallel I thought of is grooming. You're not allowed to, if you're 28, talk to a 17-year-old and then sleep with her when she turns 18. But you are, if you're 28, allowed to talk to a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old about joining the military, show them a bunch of propaganda, basically, and then get them to sign up to be a soldier.
Yep.
And which so this seems, is, let's call it more damaging.
Yeah. So this so, is, it's the same thing. A lot of people misunderstand advertising for alcohol, cigarettes when they were more advertised and the army. This isn't to 18-year-olds who are making the decision to join the army. This is the 10-year-olds who are deciding that Budweiser...
This is on the NBA, right?
Budweiser's the king of beers. You know, I remember... The Budweiser commercials that I remember are the ones with the frogs from when I was little. Like, and I thought, no joke, that Budweiser was objectively the best beer. Like, it was just obvious to me that... And that other beers were not. And because they had better... They didn't convince any 25-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they like...
No, with the frog? With the frogs?
They're not advertising.
Budweiser.
18-year-olds are not falling for this fake Grand Theft Auto thing. But 13-year-olds are building that into their worldview such that it gets baked in a way that is unquestioned. And they don't think war is like a video game, but they think that it's glamorous in a certain, you know, and it's messed up. I believe the amount that they spend, I could be totally off on this, but this is just, it was like over $200 million a year.
In advertising?
Yes. And that might even be, I might be confusing. Plus what they get from Hollywood, where they give Hollywood access to tanks and stuff for their movies. And then they have to, they get final edit on Hollywood movies.
Yeah. If you want to use a piece of U.S. Army equipment in your movie, then your movie has to be approved by the U.S. military.
Yeah. It's, you know, obviously there's times where war is necessary, unquestioned. It's just a shame that the way that we get people to participate in it is by essentially glamorizing it for young kids that then don't think to go back and question it when they enter. And then we make them sign a binding contract. Yeah, yeah.
Well, this was me, man. I almost went to the CIA and I thought the Army was awesome. I thought the U.S. only did good things and that I could be James Bond. And now that I'm older, I have multiple acquaintances that are really messed up from serving, like maybe for life, you know, they have PTSD and trauma. And it's, that's not to say we shouldn't ever go to war. That's not to say we shouldn't have a military, but I do think that they did not know what they were signing up for.
You know, I wonder, there's places like Korea where unless you are a pop star or you can get a very specific exemption, all the StarCraft gamers have to go because they're not popular enough.
Yeah, yeah. Even the UFC fighters have to go. The pro athletes have to go. Yeah.
And so
Israel the same way.
I'm wondering if they glamorize it the same way or if they even have to. It's like, we don't need to sell this to you. Like, this is a duty. It's not going to be fun. I've never lived in Korea, so I don't know. Justin, do you have any idea? Have you?
Yeah, I don't think anyone likes it.
Okay, but so here's, not so they like it. Do like in America,
People think the military is awesome.
A lot of propaganda. Is there a lot of propaganda?
I wouldn't know about the propaganda, but I know that there's a lot of pressure to go, and there's a lot of pressure to not dodge it.
Yeah.
Because there are ways to dodge it. You can either gain a bunch of weight and get, like, too fat, or you can, you know, if you have a lot of money, obviously.
Or have some sort of injury.
Yeah, there's flat feet in the U.S.
ways.
Yeah, there's ways to get out, but it's heavily frowned upon, so it's that societal pressure.
Interesting.
I know is, like, one of the things that keeps people...
So it's totally possible that it's just similar but a different emotional mechanism, that being like duty / shame as opposed to thrill, excitement, and prestige.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's also way more of a collectivist society than the U.S. Like, you don't have to necessarily convince like the individual. It's more like everyone else is doing it.
So. I think that's what Israel's like too. It's more about protecting the homeland for them than it is about being...
all you can be.
Yeah, what's like...
And, well, dude, our phrase was, it was an army of one for a long time, right? I mean, how much... If you had to guess, like, which country came up with that motto, you would not guess Korea.
Yeah.
you would,
people want to be Jack Bauer.
Yeah.
They want to be John Wick. They want to be this cool badass who's going out there killing bad guys and saving good guys and being the hero. And that's what we're told happens when you join the military.
For sure.
And then you get a lifetime of PTSD.
Well, it's just worth saying that with any category as broad as the military, I had a cousin who joined the Coast Guard. It was a great decision for him. He didn't see action. He learned a really valuable skill. He came out. He works in the private sector drone industry now.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm 100% positive. There's a lot of people that joined the military and are really glad they did.
Yeah.
Maybe because they had a good experience. Maybe because they had a terrible experience, but they think it was their duty. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we should shut down our military. I was just noticing that we advertise it like it's a video game. Mm-hmm. And it's just weird to me that you can target 13-year-olds with it.
Yep. Another thing you and I have mentioned, but we've talked in the past how the framing of a problem really implies a solution. And I was just thinking, because I'm in LA, that homeless, a lot of people have been upset with that word for politically correct reasons. They're like, they're currently unhomed is what they prefer. But to me, focusing on the home really misunderstands and I think broadens the category of people that need help. Wait, and it casts too wide a net and implies a single serving solution, which is like, oh, if we can get the homeless homes, things will be okay. And what it would probably be more useful to subdivide and be like, look, you have some people who have mental health issues, other people who have drug addiction, other people who have just lost their job and are living in their car temporarily. And there's all different mixes of these types of
things. Yeah, some people need to get just a helping hand back on their feet. Mm-hmm. Some people need mental health help, and some people, they need help with their drug addiction. Yeah.
Yes.
They're very different camps of homeless.
Yes. And what I've seen is that unfortunately I see it in my own area. There are groups that I know, because I was talking to a friend of ours who he's a school teacher. He has a student whose parents like lost their job in the pandemic, and he and his family were living out of a car, trying their best to get back on their feet. And the school was able to like raise money to get them temporary housing, which was huge and is going to help them. And they're going to benefit from it. Mm-hmm. They're very receptive to financial injection. And I think that there's a large swath of the homeless population that is very receptive to housing, financial injection.
Sorry, when you say receptive, you mean would accept or you mean can be helped by?
Like you give them this and then
It can be the catalyst
to helping them flourish. Yeah. Yes. And then I see immediately outside my door the opposite of that, which is the guy running the scam right outside the shoe store who stands out there without shoes, pretends that he doesn't have any, takes your old shoes as you walk out of the store, sells them for drugs, and is back 30 minutes later running the same scam over and over.
Yeah, like, yeah.
A cash injection.
We only know that because literally one of our buddies saw him.
I see
him. Felt bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Gave him a pair of shoes. He put them on. And then 30 minutes later, he was standing there without shoes again. It's like, oh, you don't need a pair of shoes. I don't know what you need, but it's definitely not a pair of shoes.
Yes, or cash injection, which you need. Like now, you might need things that cost money, like social services and a counselor. But what you don't need is somebody to hand you $300 and say, use this how best you see fit. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know at all what the percentages of each are. I imagine they break down heavily by area,
Sure.
But it just seems to me that as we talk about the problem, because I felt my our buddy and me slightly misunderstanding ourselves for the first part of this conversation where he talked about how they were dealing with homelessness. And I was like, but this doesn't match my on the ground Santa Monica experience. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, we're not talking about the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree that fundraising works here. And I'm sure that if you walked around my neighborhood, you would not throw a fundraiser for this individual unless it was to get them drug rehabilitation help and you were to explicitly say where these funds were going and not give them agency over that. And that's all. Just that the word is, it hurts solution finding.
Sure. I mean, also to be fair, depending on your situation, it's not appealing to, like, the short-term appeal of quote-unquote moving up in society is pretty low.
Yeah.
I hang out in the sun. I do this scam. I get drugs. They feel amazing. And that's kind of like my circle of life versus I go through withdrawal so that I can go get a minimum wage job so that I can struggle to support myself in this new sober world. And so that's not the sexiest offer, especially when you're currently doing drugs.
It's a miracle that more people don't just turn to drugs. Because if you think about it, I mean, the Buddha said he was a prince. Life is suffering. Life is really hard. If you're wealthy, life is hard. If you're poor, it can be even freaking harder. And so there's like this struggling subsistence life. And by the way, drugs are not terribly expensive. So you could spend 4 to 12 hours of your day feeling really good. Now, you're going to feel pretty terrible for the other 12, but it's, if you remove the social shame and all of that kind of stuff, and people were just making purely rational decisions.
Short-term decisions.
Who says that the long-term even matters?
I agree.
Long-term, we're all dead. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's a miracle that more people don't just do
well, this
drugs.
Is kind of why, I mean, not kind, this is one of the reasons why people take outrage with the fact that weed is illegal. Just like, I do work a shitty minimum wage job. Yeah. I am struggling in the system. I haven't turned to crime. I'm just doing a shitty job. And when I come home, I want to smoke weed and feel better as I try to make it in society the right way. And now I'm getting in trouble for this thing that harms no one that I do in my own home. And I don't know. I am persuaded by the argument. I think it's insane that weed is illegal. So, but yeah, that is the argument. It's like, I'm doing the fucking shit work. And I have this horrible, lowest person on the totem pole life. And when I smoke weed to feel better about it, you guys hassle me or arrest me.
Yeah. Well, I think when I think about drugs, I think that I'm not saying that the way that we're describing it being used in the streets outside of our house is a sustainable, good, or admirable, advisable way to do it.
No, not at all. I'm just saying I understand why they don't get out of the cycle they're in.
Yes. I would add to that, like, the reason that more people don't do it is for a collectively rational but individually irrational shame that is placed on drug use. The fact that 70 and 80-year-olds just don't go hard at all kinds of things.
I'm always
things.
Surprised by that. I'm always surprised when 70-year-olds don't just turn to drugs.
That's because not doing drugs is a religion. It is a religiously inculcated thing that says this is bad, wrong, shameful, incorrect, and because by the way, if you fucking taste this, you're gonna have a very different opinion. Now, I'm not advising flippant drug use. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that there are circumstances, substances that it makes totally selfish, individual sense to just feel good and to not and to pay a price on the come down, given where your life is at. And when I was reflecting on that, I was like, oh my gosh, it's actually a miracle that more people don't just do this. And then I was like, oh, there's this tremendous shame, social pressure, and never, never touch it. That is, it's good for the collective because obviously if we had more people doing that, then we wouldn't collectively be here or get very far. So I'm not going to change my individual behavior, but I have thought like, it's not going to work, but I have one remaining grandparent. I was like, I wish that I could get her some MDMA. Now I would want to clear it with the doctor, and I can't and I won't, and it's not a real thing. So if you're nervous out there that I'm going to give her a heart attack, don't. It's not going to happen. But it's occurred to me that she's gone 93 years. She's in the twilight of her life. She's got very simple joys, but it's like, man, I would like her to feel pure ecstasy and pure love before she goes. It never occurred to her. It never would because of just how we treat these things.
Yeah. And there's also certain drugs certainly, or an addiction to drugs can lead you to doing behavior that's harmful to society, like robbing people. Yeah. So you have to take that into account for sure. But I don't think people have an obligation to try to live as long as possible, for instance. So if somebody wanted to work a job, become a heroin addict, never hurt any other individuals in their life, just literally go be a productive worker somehow, but then do heroin at night. It's like, you don't have an obligation to not die at 30 because of this.
You see the professor that came out and said he's been microdosing?
Yeah, heroin? He microdoses it, right?
Yeah, yeah. He works for me. He's like 60 years old or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, the problem is that, the problem is that drug addiction is very real. You can turn to drugs in a non-rational moment of emotional struggle or whatever it might be, even just peer pressures, and then now you're addicted to drugs, and then now you're doing things that are harmful to yourself and harmful society that aren't made from this idea that you're going to, peacefully die at 30 because you've chosen this life, but you're in this this very destructive cycle.
And regret it terribly.
Yeah.
You know?
So I don't want to downplay that that's super real. And what happens most of the time when you turn to stuff like this is you end up in a dark place and you regret it.
Well, here's what I'll say. I actually don't know if it happens most of the time. I don't know that it doesn't happen most of the time, but I realize that the my experience of drugs is in the therapeutic sense with psychedelics, and then really just like,
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Myths about drugs. Mm. And I don't mean myths in the sense that it's untrue. It's like there's a mythology around drugs and an origin story and the type of person. And I'm just realizing, oh, that I've never critically examined that, because what I also experienced at UVA was, not personally, but like heavy cocaine use at University of Virginia amongst the fraternity. Mm-hmm. And the people appear to be doing what you would consider highly prestigious, successful work now, and I think they continue to use cocaine.
Oh, yeah, bro. You're just talking about the finance industry and the law industry and all sorts of shit.
And so the mythology, I don't think, captures the entirety of...
Well, I don't know. So, again, this is just completely... I don't know anyone who does heroin. So I don't know anyone who does heroin and then goes and is a hedge fund manager or a partner at a law firm.
Sure.
Does that mean that heroin is more destructive, or that people don't experiment with it? Blah, 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 blah. I don't know. But let's just caveat. I know a lot of
You know people that are hooked on pain meds that like morphine? I mean, that's what heroin is.
No, dude. I don't know any investment bankers that are hooked on pain meds.
Okay. So, people that have gotten hooked on pain meds. We have a friend that was on pain meds.
Yeah, but he broke his rib and then went through withdrawal to get off of them. That's not a recreational user.
No.
The people I know that use recreational drugs and are very successful by society standards, which means clean cut, not life in disarray, financially successful, do cocaine,
coffee,
acid, coffee, alcohol, vaping, cocaine, acid, MDMA, and psilocybin.
And dip.
None of them are recreational painkiller users or recreational heroin users.
Yeah.
So that's not to say it's not out there, but just to be clear, those two, I know no one who does those at all, let alone is struggling or, I don't know anyone who does heroin. So
I'm not, just to be clear, don't do drugs, because that is the safe place for me to stand, because I don't understand it. But I was just thinking about this homeless problem, and I was like, oh, wow, I have like an unquestioned belief that drugs are bad, you know, that's still in there in my head. And I just, it's based on early conditioning and not based on thorough investigation. And I'm a little bit too nervous to investigate beyond the therapeutic psychedelic stuff. So I'm personally not going to. That's all. I think I might have one other ding.
Yeah, go for it.
Semi-related prescription meds are in there. So Tiger Woods had some run-ins. I believe, I could be wrong about this. This is 'cause not the point of the thing. He had a car accident. He was doing 40 over. He may or may not have been on prescription meds at the time.
This is recent?
Yeah, I think so. Like the news of it. I don't know if it leaked recently.
Okay.
The facts of the state of the don't really matter. Just the idea that we've said it several times, but it helps me to see that greatness doesn't prevent sadness. Like, the dude is the greatest. He was amazing for such a long period of time. Over $1 billion, potentially even after a divorce, which is incredible, because she took like $600 to $800 million.
I think it's the opposite often. I actually think often what fuels greatness is pain.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's Tiger Woods' case, but with Jordan at least, the reason he was so great is because he didn't feel like his dad. This is just from a documentary. I've never met him. But like, his dad didn't love him, and he had to earn his dad's love. Maybe you can go to basketball.
And he got angry all the time about, you know.
He punched a teammate in the face.
Yeah.
Punched Steve. And by the way, this isn't like he punched Scottie Pippen in the face. Punched Steve Kerr in the face.
Yeah.
Like, pick the smallest dude. It's not like when Kobe punched Shaq in the face. That's you're like, all right, dude, that's, you kind of respect that. I don't know what it was for, but that's ballsy at least. Punching Steve. Steve Kerr's like my size.
Yeah. Yeah, just a reminder. It's like, man, there's a time, and not like I never really wanted to be good at golf, but whoever we've talked about Avicii, I've thought, man, if I had that musical talent, Like
yeah, music. Guy, oh, dude, so many famous musicians
ridiculously talented
come out of pain.
Yeah, all the comedians, all the musicians. Like, it's just, man. Not, I guess you're right. Not only is greatness not preventative, which to me just kind of leaves me in a comfortable way, a little bit rudderless when it comes to goals, because it's like, why would I want to be great when when this is what awaits me? But also, yeah, I guess is oftentimes the engine of greatness is oftentimes pain.
Yeah.
In fact, rarely not, I think, is the way to...
I think it's fair to say that I've had some successes that you got to go, you know, one top 1% or 0.1%. They're all motivated by either insecurity or fear of failure or pain from something in my past. You know, there's not yet been one that was just inspired by pure carrot chasing.
Sure. And there are people, like we talked about Sri Ramana, who like went to the monastery and people kind of followed and became a great sage and, you know, lived in a loincloth.
Oh, I was just saying, for my own life, yeah, yeah. If I look at it, it mirrors the Michael Jordan in the sense it's like, oh yeah, all my good stuff came from bad emotions.
Yeah. I've said this in the past. I was like, look, I haven't posted on Instagram and it's, I might do a charity post once a year or something to raise a little bit of funds, but also I get a little social pat on the back from that, which feels good. Mm-hmm. The more you see me on those things, and there will come a time, just know, like, oh, like, send me some virtual hugs.
Things are bad.
when you see me like sharing more, and probably that'll always be the case. Like, cause I've thought, it's like, oh, I should, I've learned The Solo to Gravity by John Mayer, which is, I'm not great at it. It's a very hard solo for me, but I can play it, you know, passably well. I was like, I should put it on. It's like, or I could just play it and not set up the camera. Yeah. Like the day that I post it will not be the day that I've perfected it. It'll be the day that I need
validation.
Something to come Love. In. So it'll be up there. I'm working on it. But that's what I've got today.
Nice. I just have one thing. Our pescatarian diet is going to be ruined.
Oh, no.
I'll just read you the headline first. Japan says sorry, but it has to dump this radioactive water into the ocean. Japanese Prime Minister says the government has put off figuring out what to do with the contaminated water building up at the destroyed Fukushima nuclear power plant for long enough, and it's going to dump it into the ocean.
Cool.
So we're going to need a new diet.
No, that can't be real. I mean, that's such a cheeky headline. Sorry. Like,
yeah, yeah. I have no takeaway from it. The more interesting thing is just that shit like this is happening all the time, and we know nothing about it.
Yeah. Tragedy of the commons, man. People do not poop in their own owned cars. You know what I mean? Like, no, probably not in rental cars because that's gross. But like, if it's a rental, you treat it one way. And that's still like, there's some ownership over it. But yeah, man, if it's the park or if it's the ocean, like, yeah, people just don't treat it nearly as well, man.
Just keep an eye out for some double-headed salmon.
Great. There's also, I avoided it because it had the same name as Cowspiracy, which was, I saw Cowspiracy on Netflix and I was like, I want to dive into this, but man, if you mirror the name of Cowspiracy, which for those of you who doesn't know, is one of the most persuasive things for many people to go vegan, but was framed in a very dishonest way where the filmmaker pretended to be on this discovery journey. And really, the filmmaker had been very vegan activist for a long time and created a false narrative.
It's actually a shame. I don't trust any persuasion documentaries anymore because I've seen like two that fall into that camp.
Yeah.
And to me, they're kind of like reality TV at this point. It's a shame because there's a lot of really interesting looking ones on Netflix. And I go, why would this be true?
Yeah.
Like, why would this possibly be true? This is going to be cherry picked facts. And it's going
to, some of it. Here's what I think. Here's why I was like, look, if I get attached to any of the statistics, it's going to be a lie. But there might be a broad truth, which is like, look, when you get fish out of the ocean, you got to kill a whole lot of other stuff. You know, there might be some other things that I could find persuasive or moving, but I would have to throw out. I'm just saying,
even if they say that in a documentary, it doesn't make it true.
Yes, but what I could believe is like, that makes sense. You know, that if we're doing things cheaply, like I kind of do.
Well, yeah, but Cowspiracy has all sorts of things like that that make sense and are completely untrue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one thing that I remember is that they unfairly, this is only the one piece, they talk about what creates the most greenhouse gases. Yeah. And they use the entire meat industry and compare it to just tailpipe emissions from cars. And then say, oh my, and then they compare this to it and say, oh my gosh, cows are so bad. It's like, wait a second. Used the entire lifespan of getting a burger.
Moving the cows, which, and moving the water to feed the cows.
And then only the tailpipes and then the title of it is cows are more or nearly right. as much
which
as...
Which is to say you should have done the gas used to move car parts and to run car yeah. factories and everything you did for... Which, and by the way, I'm not eating cows.
Yeah.
Like, I don't eat cows. I just think this is a
just
dishonest...
Just makes me not trust you.
It's a dishonest documentary.
I know I can't trust you because you are invested in changing my mind. Yeah. You're not invested in telling the truth, which is a bummer. And it's like, because what's funny is that person who made it might have told the truth 95% of the time. But if I find one thing, I just got to go, well, now what do I do? This is a problem that we've had in hiring. It's like, look, if we're looking at any ad copy or anything like that, I want to, with everyone in the company, be like, I trust you, do your own thing. But if I review a piece of work and I don't see a mistake, I see something that is factually untrue. Like, you say that it's guaranteed to do X, Y, and Z, and it is not guaranteed under those things. Then I go, oh gosh, now I have to scrutinize every single line of what you say, and having you help is no longer a help because I have to have final say on every single period, comma, and apostrophe. Try to tell a tooth documentary, guys. And unfortunately, I suspect that I could learn a lot from both C-spiracy and cow-spiracy people. Yeah. And I don't know that the C-spiracy guy is the same. He might have just picked up on the name, you know. But it was a slight turnoff to me to see that. Anything else you got?
Yeah, one clarification on the sponsor from last week, Marketing Step by Step, because somebody emailed in confused because I said it was $97. And they Googled it and found it for $1,000. You have to go through our link because they emailed us. They're like, oh, you were wrong about the price. So through our link, it is $97. I got a special deal from the guy that runs the company. So if you go to evanpagantraining.com/charisma, you'll get Marketing Step by Step for $97. If you go to their website, you'll get it for $1,000.
Same course.
So you have to go to evanpagantraining.com/charisma. And then you can get it for $97.
It's a cool deal. I didn't know we were able to. I think they might not have. It's an older program, so I suspect they weren't pushing it as hard. And it's like, no, we've been begging.
Oh, it's the best. I think it's this, literally the number two best resource of any kind for someone who wants to start a business. That's why I hit them up begging to promote it.
We should also, along these lines, if you can find it, go for it. Personal Power 2. It's from the 80s. It's really old.
They do sell it. They sell it on the website
now. See if we can get an affiliate link. Personal Power 2 for its, people sometimes ask me, like, what should I give to a friend this? What should I give? And the question to which Personal Power 2 is the answer is someone who feels a little bit lost or isn't hitting their goals or is a little, it's just like, oh my God.
Oh, I've listened to it multiple times.
I've probably gone through it 5 times.
Yeah, it's great.
It is fantastic.
We should try, Justin, will you try to get an affiliate link from them?
Sure, Personal Power 2.
It's Tony
Personal
Robbins.
Power 2,
It's Tony Robbins. I doubt they'll get back just because they're a large company, but it's very good. All of, just so you don't listen to the first piece that is not Tony Robbins talking. It's like 45 minutes of some dude from the 80s trying to build cred for Tony when Tony needed it.
Tony doesn't need cred
anymore. He's got it. Start on day one and just be prepared for a lot of like, you know, the ad, you know, the Marlboro man. It's like, no, Tony, we don't know the ad. You know,
he's got one for like Alka-Seltzer.
R-O-L-A-I-D-S. You've all heard the commercial. Okay. It's dated, but the psychology is not. So, cool.
And then we got a new sponsor for this week. We have an affiliate deal with them. So instead of getting paid, we get some percentage of the sales. I don't know what it is, but it's Inside Tracker. This is something I have been using for years, and you get a discount if you go through our link. But what it is it's blood work. So this is something I have been doing once or twice a year for years because it measures so much from your inner age to your testosterone to your vitamin D. So when I read all these health things talking about deficiencies and how you should supplement, I didn't know what to take. And so I just go take this blood test and it tells you what you're deficient in. Because a lot of people get confused, like in 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss, he talks about how he eats Brazil nuts for testosterone. So then every man that read the book started eating Brazil nuts. It's like, no, this is only good if you have a selenium deficiency. Yeah. That's why it was so transformational for him. And so, it tells me everything I'm low on. And I have almost tripled my testosterone by using it.
And it tells you, it also does the difference between free testosterone. It's like, it's very detailed.
Yeah. But just for my results and then changing it with some changes to diet and supplements, I've almost tripled my testosterone. And then the most recent one, I saw I had a magnesium deficiency, a B12 deficiency. It tells you all this stuff. And then you just change it and then I used to
do it every 3 months. I should get back on it. And so what you can do with it is you can either go to like a clinic or whatever, and they'll draw blood for more money. And I think this is worth it. They'll come to your home. And mm-hmm. so like, you know, I've woken up to a knock on the door. I stumble out of bed.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably should have had some more water. They come, they draw blood, and that's your...
Yeah, they do. It's got, at the high end, they do 50 biomarkers.
Yeah.
And they tell you where you are in them. And what's nice is over time, you track your trajectory.
Yeah.
So in addition to knowing if you're in the healthy range, you can also see if how your lifestyle is affecting your own baseline over time.
Yeah. To me, the nice thing is they come to your house because I'm a lazy person and I'm not going to ever go anywhere or make an appointment. And they just, first thing in the morning, they're there. So
yeah, I imagine we have a lot of people who are optimizers, fitness optimizers, social optimizers. So if you're interested, insidetracker.com/charisma on command.
What's the
22%
discount?
22% off.
Dope.
Oh, and if you don't go through that link, but use the code charisma, it also gets you 22% off.
Cool.
So that's our sponsor for this episode.
Yay.
I actually had a question that I saw on our regular YouTube channel randomly that I was curious if you had a thought on, Char. Mm-hmm. In the Elon Musk video, I talked about questioning your constraints. And one example was how if you want to start a business, you can move abroad to lower your cost of living so that when you're not making any money, you extend how much time you have to still pay yourself rent and food and all that stuff. And someone commented that that only works for the middle class and that it's that is not a constraint you can question if you're poorer than that, basically. Because I was saying that's you think you can't start a business because you don't have enough money. But if you go abroad, that constraint goes away. Mm-hmm. And I was curious if you think that that is a real constraint or if you think this person's just not questioning the constraint the right way. I looked it up. It's $160. I picked a random city. To fly from Chicago to Mexico City, round trip, is $160. And then once you do that, I assume that rent and food and everything in Mexico City is cheaper even than the poor neighborhoods in Chicago. So it seems like you would still extend your cost of living, but I was just curious if you had a opinion on that because we often do advocate.
If we're talking low class, not low class, low economic.
Low income.
Low income, but let's say no debt, which is... I guess here's the two things. One, you're going to need to develop a skill set that is remote and so you can earn dollars while abroad.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, for sure. Like if you are willing to, and now granted, you're going to need extra time. And I think it's both, there's truth in it, but it's not fully true to say, oh, I'm so busy that I don't have the time to do it, which is I work this time, I have to take a double shift. And I think what you find in many of those cases, that is true, but there's also TikTok, TV, other stuff. And the question is, are you willing to sacrifice to get out of that?
Mm-hmm.
With any of this stuff, my perspective is, you're probably right that there are additional constraints on your position, but you do yourself no benefit by not questioning them, like by commenting in a YouTube video, I can't do this. You would not be the first person of low income to make it work. So it's not impossible, though it is going to statistically happen less often for sure.
That's all. I was just curious. I was like, is moving abroad to work? Because this, I mean, the same thing.
No, it's like...
Is it a middle-class privilege?
Forget abroad. You can move to cheaper America. You cross a border. Now, you have to get a passport, which can take extra time and investment, sure. But it's like, look, if you're living in Los Angeles, anywhere, and you can move 50 miles west,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be cheaper. Now, will there be work there? This is why step one is figure out some sort of remote skill that allows you to be paid in big city dollars when you live rurally or in a different country.
I think even if you're making $10 an hour online or $12 an hour online, but you're living in Mexico City, it probably goes a lot further.
I'll tell you, and you're like, oh, there's not a lot of this. We have a friend that at the beginning was an expert at this. He was doing Google CAPTCHA for $20 an hour, you know? And it was like, look, that's $20 an hour anywhere. That's $20 an hour in Manhattan on 54th Street or in some tiny little shack somewhere where its food costs $2.
Yeah.
And then he additionally... Classic was like two computers outsourcing that, trying to like get it up to $40 an hour.
He would borrow a laptop so he could do it.
Laptop
he could do it
and just
twice.
Double
the same
CAPTCHA.
Time. Click on the cat.
Cheating,
click on the cat.
Cheating the big Google guy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things. That's probably not one of them. What he had that someone who was of lower income probably didn't have was the imagination and experience to know all the nooks and crannies that might be available to him to mm-hmm. make money online. And I think what this person probably lacks is an example of someone who has done that. And thus the imagination of like, oh no, man, like you'd be surprised how big the online gig economy is and how you might be able to find a lucrative place there. So, yeah.
Okay. I was just curious. I was like, I have my own bias, but
sure.
I saw it. I thought it was an interesting question. So I figured I'd ask you.
Cool. What do we got, Justin?
First one is, I recently got feedback from my friend that I don't show enough empathy to his stories. I don't think I have a problem when it comes to showing sympathy. I don't show enough sympathy. I don't think I have a problem when it comes to showing sympathy, but I find often that once I put myself in the antagonist's shoes in her story, I end up expressing that I also understood where they came from along with her. For example, yes, I know what you're saying, but I think more about what your boss would have wanted from his employer.
You're showing too much empathy, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I'm interested in how you guys would personally respond to someone you find hard to sympathize with, but is requesting you to do it. Do you simply show more sympathy and ignore the other side, or would you check them on it? Is there harm in ignoring it?
I'm glad you said, what would I do? Because I don't know if this is the right thing. I don't know the right thing to do. I know what I do, which is, it sounds like more towards what you're doing. It's like, yeah, it sounds like your boss has a point. Like, you know, like, I think most people, and this is, I think people, you want both. I go to my mom to be on my side all the time, ridiculous, even when I'm wrong. Yep. And I just want someone to listen and tell me that I'm right and I deserve it. People, if they do, they come to me to get my perspective on it, which is not, I'm like, oh, yeah. You're wrong.
Well, no, but some people, like your a girlfriend, wouldn't come to you because they want your perspective. They just come to you because you're their boyfriend.
Yeah, and she comes to me and then is not happy often with the immediate thing. And I'm like, look, where I stand is like, if you don't want my opinion, don't ask
her. Yeah.
But please, for both of us, don't ask me ever to lie to you. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, you don't want, you wouldn't respect me if I lied to you. I'm going to tell you, you're in the wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not, that's only my opinion. By the way, you came here seeking my opinion. I'm not shoving it down your throat. If you want me to stop talking, let's just change the topic.
I
think that you were rude to your friend. I think your boss has a good point, and I think that you should apologize. But I'm not going to make you, you're just asked.
Yeah. What I say is you don't have to do this. I just say you don't feel bound by this. Like, you've come, you've told me the situation. I'm going to tell you what I think, but also you can just ignore it.
Yeah. My sense, and I do get like, I enjoy these conversations. Like, hold on, let's get this straight. You're coming to me because you want me to repeat your own thoughts back to you, regardless of my perspective. I'm not available for that.
Yeah.
That's not a thing that I do for anyone. So I love you. Good luck. If you want that, I'm sure someone else can give it to you. When you want my perspective, which is simply that, let me know.
Yeah.
And the solace that I take in that is that I can't choose my perspective. Like, I can't choose to feel any differently about it. Like, you could describe it differently and add more information. But with all that, it's like, how could you say that? It's like, the only other option is to lie to you. Like, how could you say that? How could you take their side? Like, the only other thing I can do right now is lie to you.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened when you told me all of these pieces.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel deterministically just strung by the facts that as you've relayed them to me. Yeah. So
you also can have, I mean, this isn't going to be as much sympathy as they're looking for, probably, but you can say, like, listen, I totally get why.
And I get where you're coming
from. That frustrates you.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had a conversation like this. Like, I totally get why that frustrates you. It makes total sense to me. I think if you got outside yourself into the other person's perspective, you'd see that your feelings just didn't come into the equation because they have other stuff going on. And like, if I were them, I also wouldn't have thought much about my roommate because of this much more pressing thing on their mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I'm like, I get where you're coming from. I totally get it. And it wasn't nice what happened. And so I'll say that, and I'll say, at the same time, I don't think it would be appropriate to go reprimand the person because given what's happening in their life, like that small slight, just forgive it, basically. Mm-hmm. And so like, that's how I present the opinion.
Yeah. So that's not to say you should do that.
No, no, it's just what I do.
This is, it's funny. It's a little bit meta. It's like, you asked for my opinion. here's my opinion. So all I can do is tell you what I do. Sometimes I feel like I know more of like the quote unquote right thing, but I'm glad that, you know, there's people out there like my mom who will just never say that I'm wrong about anything.
Probably just your mom.
It's probably just her. And so it's good that there's one, you know, it's good that
I have one person as well. My mom.
Yeah. Any more than that might not be healthy. So cool.
Next is, I have really enjoyed your social skills tutorials. The only other comparable guide I have followed and learned with, is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Classic.
I've even taken the course and later been invited to their course as a mentor. Mm. However, after recently binge watching House of Cards, I'm starting to feel like, although I'm seeing good results with my social reactions, I'm beginning to act in a fake and manipulative way. How do you reconcile this, using all these social tricks to be more engaging while not turning into a completely fake person when it comes to social interactions?
Great question.
It is the great question. Yeah. So I think that it's interesting. And every solution is its own undoing, which is to say, it's not a mistake or a problem that your calculated choice of how to behave has led to robotic behavior. It's like that is a natural progression of moving from unthought out conditioned behavioral patterns to thought out practiced behavioral patterns. And what you'll find is that, yeah, like I do feel like now I'm becoming too much of a brain in these interactions. And doing too much of the right thing and not as much of the authentic thing. So in my own experience, what I am happy with it, it was like, here I am as a teenager just doing what I've been conditioned to do and getting pretty poor results. Then I move along and I start practicing and trying to get all of the right things to happen. And then I get to a point and I look, which of each of these do I want to choose and carry forth with me? So I'm going, and basically where I landed is, I'm more introverted than I was in my 20s. Like, and I don't want to constantly go and be the star of the show. And so I'm not going to make myself. Sometimes it's fun, and I will. And I guess I allow for more fluidity between different modes of being, if that makes sense. So that's kind of how I've jumped out. Additionally, I think that some of the things become unthinking habit a bit more easily.
That's what I was just going to say. As you work on this, more stuff becomes effortless. Talking with your hands, posture, eye contact, speaking through a smile when you're telling a story. That stuff stops being front of mind as you build the habit.
Mm-hmm. And so then there's a question of like, okay, if I know that for just about almost, and this isn't true of every habit, for almost any habit, and a habit that isn't this way is like jealousy, right? I've good luck working yourself out of jealousy with practice. Yeah. It's resistant to standard things. But if you're like, oh, I want to tell stories with my hands, think about that for 3 weeks and then let go, and it'll carry. Like it'll coast for a while.
Also, you might be at a certain point, and then you elevate yourself through thinking about it consciously. And then it becomes a bit of an unthinking habit, but when you stop thinking about it, it falls a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so you're much better than you were before, but you're not gesticulating quite as much as when it was front of mind. And that's okay. Now you're to the right of the bell curve relative to other people. It's an unthinking habit. And at the same time, you are technically, you wouldn't get an A+ on it in the way you would have when it was the thing that you were focused on.
Yeah, this is, take for instance, day one of Charisma University. One of the easiest charisma things you can do is when someone asks you, how are you, is be better than good. Except I don't always do that. I did for a period of time because I was trying to max out my charisma. And now what I do is sometimes I'm good, sometimes I'm great, sometimes I'm awesome, but it's exactly what you described. Here I was fine or good every time because that was my standard response. Then I practiced being excellent, phenomenal, like every fucking day. And now it's on average above where it was, but below the top. And I'm very comfortable with that. So I think that hopefully you start to follow that same thing and you can make your own decision as to how much longer you want to engrave those habits and when you want to ease up a little bit and allow yourself to fall to a more comfortable new natural.
Yeah. One thing I would say, if you're like, I don't want this to be as front of mind as it has been, but at the same time, I don't want to fall back to my old habits. Watching people who are excellent subconsciously does program you, I think, such that, let's say you were really sarcastic and negative, which is what I was like in high school when I started college. I would accidentally hurt people's feelings all the time. Watch Chris Pratt. And even if you're not walking into conversation with Dale Carnegie in mind, the fact that you have been watching Chris Pratt instead of watching whatever comedian is
snarky,
that snarky dick kind of person.
Like a Bill Burr.
You will subconsciously continue to be that way more so, if that makes sense. You can kind of pre-frame yourself such that the habit doesn't go away even when it's not front of mind. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I was learning charisma, I was very cognizant of what media I was consuming.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Next is, hey guys, I was recently told that a good woman endures in regards to relationships, but I'm wondering what and how much does a good woman have to endure in order to be considered a good woman, and when is it okay to give up on a relationship?
Like endure suffering, no, okay, I assume? So
listen, anytime you hear good anything, not anytime, many of the times you hear good woman, good man, good citizen, good Christian, good whatever, it's a mechanism of control by someone who doesn't have your best interest in mind. And I've never heard, I have. This is a clear example. This is a very clear example from someone who does not have your best interest in mind or hasn't critically thought about this themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of like those Tinder profiles. They're like, if you're not man enough to give me everything I want, even when it's unreasonable, then you're not for me. It's like, yeah, okay, if that's what we're going to define a man as, count me out.
I have the opposite thought, which is, well, like, let's drop the good. But this is actually a very common trope amongst men's stuff, which is that women are a storm and a good man is the rock that is just sustains and is centered in the storm. And it's a romantic notion to think the whole world around you could be chaos and you could be centered. But it's like, wait a second, the whole world isn't chaos. It's just her.
Yeah.
And so what Ben and I have talked about is like, I'm not the rock. I'm the bird.
Yeah.
And when I see a storm, I fly away and I don't go back there ever. I'm done. I'm not.
I'm a migrating tropical bird.
I'm not. I am fragile and I hate storms and I don't want to be around it. Now, obviously, that's an oversimplification. No. People in my life can be sad and I'm not going to abandon them.
But I have fallen for the trap that someone is trying to trap you with. And I have seen this many times. It is often people try to get you to stay in situations that aren't good for you by saying that that's what a, good. And then whatever good adjective, good woman, good man, strong person, that's what they would do, you know? And so,
no.
Yeah, I mean, I just reject that completely.
So even the question of how much is like, forget it. That's not what a good woman does.
The fact that you're asking this,
how much,
probably means your relationship should end, honestly.
Maybe, I don't know what it means in terms of the relationship. It's whoever, just throw that out. A good woman blanks is just not the case.
Unless it's like, doesn't murder.
Yeah. Also, just so you know, that's also a mechanism of control.
Yeah.
You know, and there are appropriate times for murder. There's a time for, you know, what is it? A season for everything.
We're talking about the purge over here.
Yeah. Throw it out, and then you're going to have to reestablish what a good woman, person, soul, whatever it is, does. And you're going to, and
in terms of your relationship, I would just reflect on, is this good for your happiness, short-term, long-term fulfillment, whatever you want to call it? I would not stay in a relationship to try to prove your character.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Great question.
And then last one is, I'm reaching out because I have this family member who is only slightly older than me that works in tech sales and frequently discourages me and shoots down any business ideas I might have or even from attempting to start a business. I've read the 4-hour work week as recommended, and I've invested in self-education for my idea and have only recently begun optimizing my Facebook page for this idea. Unfortunately, after having seen that I updated my Facebook page, this family member has persisted in continuing to talk down to me as if I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't plan to stop trying things because he doesn't think I know enough or am competent enough, but how do I deal with someone like this?
I think I can help a little. So I don't know why you went to your Facebook page. Now, there might be a good reason, but typically a good business is one that requires no family or friend support, which means that one of the last places you should be is on Facebook or Instagram. You know, so
this is separate. Like, sorry, there's two ways to use Facebook. One is I make an energy drink company and I create an energy drink page for the company. But then your family and friends would have no idea it was you.
Yeah.
The way that you're talking about is something we've seen a lot from people trying to start businesses.
I am a coach.
They turn to their friends and family as an attempt to either validate their idea, which they can't do, or be clients, which is if your business needs that, then it's not going to work out long term.
So generally speaking, and this isn't to say that you're hiding it, but like if you're doing something and you're using friends and family as an initial boost, it's actually a bad way of doing it. It's going to give you false indicators of the success, and sometimes you'll be really onto something that would do well in the market, but your family is going to hold you back. So, that's just a general direction. I don't know exactly what you're up to, but people in our life, unless we told them, did not know what we were doing, and I'm very glad. We had a website that was for people who were interested in parkour, and then we had a website that was for people that were interested in charisma. And unless a family member Googled charisma, they would not find us, and that was perfect.
Yeah, my friends knew because I was leaving, living with them to go move to Brazil.
Sure, sure.
But and so I wasn't recruiting them as clients or anything
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. And now, so where did you get people? We went to forums of interested groups. So we went to parkour forums, and we went to dating forums and all these kind of things, and tried to find people interested in that topic. That's a side point. How do you deal with this kind of a person?
Time will tell. Was my strategy. Dude, I had so many people tell me it was a bad idea to start a business and leave finance. I just went, okay.
So I made a video on this. It's literally called like how to deal with the haters that come when you start personal development.
Yeah.
So look it up. I forget the exact phrase that we've used in the past, but this one shuts people up cold. And there's like six other ones.
I know what you're talking about. It's it's a good thing that you get to live your life and I get to live mine, because we'd both probably be unhappy if we had to switch.
Yes.
I just watched the video.
That will fucking shut people up. Okay, so I was like, let's see, your uncle comes up to you, he's got all this advice. Look, you just drop what Ben said. It's a good thing that you get to live your life and I get to live mine, because we'd both be unhappy. And what that is like, I don't want what you have. And I'm not going to shove it down your throat, but I don't really admire it.
Yeah.
And if you want to ask more, you can keep asking, but you're just asking for me to do a put down that I'm not interested in delivering to you. I want to live and let live.
The other thing is your business idea might suck and you might have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's exactly where we were in terms of knowing. I knew nothing about, went to business school. I knew nothing about starting a business. So when people would come up to me and they say, yeah, this isn't how you do it. I go, yeah, maybe. Probably. I don't know. Time will tell. I'll figure it out. But this is my first iteration and I'm going to learn how to do this.
Yeah. This is the other thing is you don't need to defend any idea ever. Like what Ben and I defended was ourselves.
The pursuit of entrepreneurship and a willingness to bet on myself and you to eventually succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
When people are like, parkour, what? DVDs? You might be totally right. I guess we're going to find out.
When we had an LLC, we did not call it parkour. We called it, I'm not going to say it, but something enterprises. But
it's an umbrella company.
It's like a nameless thing that could be anything.
Yeah.
And the reason that we did that was because it was like, everything's going to fail.
Charisma Command could fail. Dude, when we first started this, it's like, it might not be this. I'm just going to keep trying and learning and trying to be a better business person.
And if
Charisma
on Command fails, it's like, okay, what am I left with? The skin on my bones and like, that's back to the shop.
Yeah. So I think you don't have to get defensive about your idea or convince them it's a good idea. The market will tell you if the product idea plus your marketing is good or bad. And then you will either give up or you'll continue to change and pivot and grow and learn and get better.
Yeah, and there's 100 different things you could say, but I think you know this. Like, listen to people that have the life that you want and not those that don't. Well-meaning or otherwise, they just don't know what it takes.
I had at least a dozen people lovingly tell me that I was a moron for quitting my job.
Yeah.
These people
go so quiet. They disappear.
No, they turned around. They say that it's great and they love it.
They've always been supporters.
So one guy did pull the like, I've always known you were going to work. I was like, dude, that's not how I remember it, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. All right, cool.
That's all I had.
All right.
Cool.
We're going to hop over to Patreon now if you guys want to join. We appreciate it. It helps us keep the podcast going. We're a little bit under our goal, so every person that joins does mean a ton, and we're going to continue to answer these kinds of questions and oftentimes riff on anything as ideas come up.
All of the Patreon money goes to funding something about the podcast, whether it's Justin or some other thing related to the podcast. Charlie and I at this point make nothing from it. So if you like the podcast, joining Patreon just helps ensure it keeps going. And we also guarantee that at least once a month, we will answer a personal question of yours. I think almost no matter what it is. So
can we still do that? Well, we're trying to, hopefully. As that scales, that's not going to be the case. So if you're watching this in the future, we might have to work back on that because we sometimes spend like 2 hours on these.
Well, what it was we would answer and you could ask any amount of questions. So we just have people coming in hot with like 6 questions a month.
Got it.
But I still think, Justin, correct me if I'm wrong, everyone gets a question answered?
As of right now, yeah, we sometimes even circle back and like double up on some people. Mm-hmm. But I'm literally just going through chronologically in the DMs. So it's like first come, first serve.
Cool. So yeah, we hope to see you over there. It keeps the podcast going and it's essentially another half podcast or full podcast every week. So
we appreciate you. Justin definitely appreciates you. Yes. All right, let's do it.
See you there. Peace.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.